periodista Luis Alberto Castaño, con su equipo de colaboradores.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Andrés Barbosa. Desde Sydney, Australia, la querida Daniela Villegas, periodista feminista y maestra en...
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and that was Muslim Magomayev, who of course was a very famous Soviet singer, and that was a song which he put out in 1969. And one of the reasons why I wanted to play that song right here to introduce the show, and I apologize, I haven't really been here that often over the last few weeks. It's you know, there's been a lot of things going on. In fact, I'll talk a little bit about that. I mean, tonight's show is going to kind of be a bit all over the place in the sense that there is so many different things which need to be discussed, whether that's things going on in the world or things that are frankly going on in my life that I really want to talk about. But where I want to start out with, and which really kind of ties in with Muslim Magomayev's song right there, is the experience I had going to the Communist Party of Canada's Ontario nominating convention in Toronto as of last weekend. It's a very interesting experience, given that, you know, we have nominating conventions to select delegates to go to the Central Convention, which is going to be happening next weekend, actually, in Toronto. The Communist Party does this every year. And so this was Ontario's nominating convention, which I was a part of. I was a delegate to from Guelph. I was the delegate from Guelph, one of the delegates from Guelph. And, you know, there's communists young and old at this meeting, you know, at our Toronto location, at our headquarters there. And, you know, you have people who are relatively young, you know, they've just come out of the Young Communist League and they've just recently joined the party and are participating, possibly for the first time, some of them were. Or you have comrades, frankly, who are about, you know, they've been in the party 30 or 40 years, you know, almost their entire adult life. They've been in the Communist Party. They've been, you know, in it for the long haul. They've participated in all kinds of struggles, gone all through, you know, all kinds of experiences, have been with the party through the, you know, almost the collapse of the party in the 1990s after the fall of the Soviet Union. And they kept at it. They kept through, you know, thick and thin, you know, they kept with the party and they kept with the struggle. You know, so there's this major contrast in the room, really, between young and old. And there are, frankly, not too many middle-aged people in the party. It seems like mostly either young people or it's, you know, the older comrades. But there was one thing which an older comrade, Sam Hammond, one of the things he said, which really stuck with me on one of the days last weekend at this convention. He was talking about how there's been a major effort to erase communists from the history of working class struggle in this country, in Canada. Certainly, well, this isn't the only country where this has gone on. You know, basically you get social democrats, like NDP kind of people, acting as though we don't exist. The communists don't exist. That we never played a significant role in the labor movement, in particular in this country. You know, people like Sam Gindin, who, you know, was a longtime labor organizer, and now he's like an academic at York University. You know, who basically go out there and in their articles claim that the On to Ottawa trek and other significant moments in labor history in Canada, claiming that they belong to the NDP, basically. You know, and we as communists are considered taboo. You know, we're not even mentioned. You know, they pretend we don't exist. They try to bury us. Even though we were there, that we were organizing on the ground, we were organizing the strikes, the boycotts, the marches, all these things going on in the 1930s. At least as much, if not more so, than the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation, CCF, as the NDP was called at that time. You know, we played a massive role in organizing working people for struggle, whether that was like around the around minimum wage, whether that was around pensions, whether that was around the 8-hour day, whether that was around any of the kind of things that were being fought over, the issues that were being fought over back at that time in the 1930s. And yet they tried to take that history from us. And they do. And this is the case in the United States. This is the case in many, in the UK. This is the case in like many countries, you know, where the communists are effectively written out of the history of labor struggles and left-wing struggles and progressive movements in general. And the role that we played is either downplayed or simply not even mentioned. It's the most condescending kind of thing imaginable. You know, I think he even said like a few weeks ago, in one of the shows, like I even began the show. This is when I was talking about Ireland and the liberation struggle there against colonialism. You know, what it's like for a people to be buried and having a struggle to reclaim, you know, your history, your pride, your very existence, which effectively has been, you know, they've tried to write you out of history. That's the situation with Canada, with communists here in Canada. And we effectively have to reclaim our history, our even our right to speak, it seems, you know, like even a right to be heard and like the right to be taken seriously. And I certainly experienced that in the election campaign, you know, with the kind of condescension that I was treated sometimes, whether that was like going to people's doors and asking for signatures and sometimes getting like some flack for doing that, or whether that was like from members of the audience at certain debates, you know, who basically were, had this almost McCarthyite view of the world and like saw communism as the enemy. You know, there's a lot of struggle that needs to be done. You know, and almost me playing that song from Muslim Magoviev, you know, that really upbeat song, you know, that the really fun-loving kind of song from 1969, which he sang there. You know, that's not a history that people know about. You know, if they know that the Soviet Union produced any music at all, they just think it's like, you know, propaganda, brainwashed, you know, kind of nonsense, you know, nothing artistically sophisticated or worth listening to or anything. You know, it's, there are a lot of condescending attitudes. There's a lot of like history, which, you know, people don't even know exists. That's one of the reasons why I even made this show in the first place and started doing back in the USSR, like what, 2010, was to kind of bring this history forward. And talk about what communism really is and what it's all about. You know, and the history and the music behind these different movements and these different struggles and, you know, goes for the situation in Canada as well. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why that was such a moving moment for me, you know. And really, I actually want to just briefly share another song, which is from a socialist movement, in this case from the Communist Party of Germany, the Red Front, which was its paramilitary wing, which fought against the Nazi brown shirts in the streets in the 1920s and 30s. And really were the last-ditch defenders against fascism in Germany, if you can say so. They were the ones who were on the streets. They were fighting back against fascism. They were the ones who, even if they, when they were driven into exile, they were the ones who fought on in the Ernst Thälmann Brigade and the other international brigades that were fighting against fascism in Spain. You know, and there's a real history of struggle there, which, likewise, is often buried and not talked about. And this is the history that needs to be reclaimed, it needs to be broadcast, it needs to be known. So let it be known. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Trommeln werden gerührt. Links, 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 links. Die Arbeiterklasse marschiert. Wir fragen euch nicht nach Verband und Partei. Seid ihr nur ehrlich im Kampf mit dabei gegen Unrecht und Reaktion? Wir sind durch die Not, durch den Hunger vereint. Uns binden die Opfer im Kampf vor dem Feind. Unsere Lieder der Revolution.
Roter Wendling, grüßt euch, Genossen. Haltet die Fäuste bereit. befreit. Haltet die rote Reihen geschlossen, dann ist der Tag nicht mehr weit. Kämpfen wir als Sozialisten endlich in einer Front. Arbeitsbrüder, Kommunisten, Rotfront, Rotfront. Links, 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 links.
Der Kampf wird weitergeführt.
Links, 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 links.
Ein Lump, wer kapituliert. Wir tragen die Wahrheit von Haus zu Haus und jagen die Lüge zum Schornstein hinaus, wie Karl Marx es und Lenin gelehrt. Und schlug auch der Feind unsere Besten tot. Der Wedding kommt wieder, Berlin bleibt rot, damit Deutschland den Deutschen gehört.
Roter Wedding, grüßt euch Genossen, haltet die Fäuste bereit. Haltet die rote Reihen geschlossen, dann ist der Tag nicht mehr weit. Kämpfen wir als Sozialisten endlich in einer Front. Arbeitsbrüder, Kommunisten, Rotfront, Rotfront.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was the Rote Wedding, the Red Wedding. And that was by an East German communist singer named Ernst Busch. So, the Red Wedding, for all you, of course, Game of Thrones fans out there, of course, you know, that's from George R. R. Martin's series. But as that song, of course, proves, the Red Front got there about 60 years before he did. And made a song called The Red Wedding. You know, celebrating communist resistance against fascism. You know, a bit of a different theme there. But there you go. Now you know. See, this is a history, once again, that people do not know about. Now, I actually do want to read this excerpt from an article, actually, by a communist named Stephen Gowans, Canadian communist. Because one of the things I mentioned before I played that song was talking about how the NDP and more, you could say, mainstream progressive forces in Canada and the United States and elsewhere, like, really try to write communists out of the history of labor struggles and whatnot, and really oppose communism, like, really, like, in a lot of cases, very anti-communist in their attitudes. And this is what Stephen Gowans actually addresses in this article which he wrote, which is entitled, When Did Left-Wing Politics Become the Defense of Capitalism? And he addresses specifically, you know, what he calls utopian socialists. And he says, the universe of utopian socialists consists of three options. Number one, real existing socialism. You know, like the socialism that actually exists in places like Cuba. Capitalism, number two. And three, utopia. Ordered from the least to most desirable. Utopia is, of course, unattainable. So capitalism is settled for, even celebrated, as immeasurably superior, as the immeasurably superior realistic option. Meanwhile, anyone who thinks a publicly owned, centrally planned economy is a good idea and would willingly allow the coercive powers of the state to be used to repress the resistance of capital is understood either to be detached from reality, a brutal monster, or hopelessly out of date. And of course, we see this. We see people on the left, you know, especially since the fall of the Soviet Union, attacking communism, saying it's brutal, it's repressive, it's, like, you know, evil, it's all these things. These are people on the left. These are not conservatives. You know, they of course do it too. But we can kind of understand why they do it. You know, of course, they're, like, you know, major partisans of capitalism, you know, and defend capitalism all the time and advance it. But these are people on the left who are bashing communism, you know, who are attacking communism. and saying it's an evil thing. And so Stephen Gowans goes on, really existing socialism, in this view, is a grim, even monstrous corruption that no one in his right mind would willingly accept, let alone advocate for. And to anyone steeped in decades of Cold War propaganda, this sounds fine, even obvious, especially in the United States, where years of social engineering has turned communism into the secular equivalent of Satanism, and Stalinism into the equivalent of Hitlerism. But scratch the surface and the view totters precariously before collapsing into a heap of fantasies, wild exaggerations, and fear-mongering. Why wouldn't one advocate free healthcare? Free education through university with living expenses fully covered? Free childcare, free legal services, guaranteed employment, subsidized rents, and dirt-cheap public transportation, all of which existed in the Soviet Union. Why wouldn't one advocate for that? Why wouldn't one advocate the end of gross inequalities in wealth, income, education, and opportunity? Why wouldn't one advocate for the elimination of racial and national discrimination? The abolition of homelessness and economic insecurity? Because this is what really existing socialism did. Places like the Soviet Union and Cuba, throughout Eastern Europe and many other places. Often under the most trying circumstances, facing invasion. We just had Victory Day in Russia where, of course, they were celebrating the defeat of Nazi Germany after what is perhaps one of the bloodiest wars in human history. And they did all this, the Soviet Union and other places did all this with fewer resources than any Western country had. So for those people who oppose that, they oppose real existing socialism. Those on the left who oppose real existing socialism. Those who oppose those countries where all those victories were won. Where ignorance, disease, poverty, gross inequality, homelessness, and economic insecurity were overcome. How is capitalism superior to that? Capitalism has no intention of eliminating ignorance, disease, poverty, gross inequality, homelessness, and economic insecurity. It's practically founded on those things. Under capitalism, people have to live in ignorance, disease, poverty, gross inequality, homelessness, and economic insecurity so that the people at the top can keep making profit. Can keep securing that wealth. They're billions and billions and billions, trillions of dollars, really. All the stuff that gets siphoned up to the global 1% every year. So Stephen Gowan says, when did left-wing politics become the defense of capitalism, as preferable to free healthcare, free education, and guaranteed employment? None of which is possible under capitalism. Something to think about. So without further ado, I'm going to play another song here. This is called the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. And this is about those American socialists who went over to Spain to fight against fascism in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. Another group of socialists who have largely been written out of history. Certainly they're not talked about in the American education system or most any other education system for that matter. Yet they played a heroic role. And so we should remember them. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
From the farms, from the cities, from every land came the Abe Lincoln Brigade. With a dream in their hearts and a gun in their hands, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. No passeran, no passeran, so sang the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Across the years and the oceans, we still sing the song of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Cries from the cities, shouts from the hills of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. The fire in the hearts that is warming us still, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. No passeran, no passeran, so sang the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Across the years and the oceans, we still sing the song of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Lincoln Brigade. Their stories still thrill me. We work side by side with the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. No passeran, no passeran, so sang the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Across the years and the oceans, we still sing the song of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. So raise glasses and voices, give them a toast, oh, the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Those who die best are the ones who live most, like the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. No passeran, no passeran, so sang the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Across the years and the oceans, we still sing the song of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. No passeran, no passeran, so sang the Abe Lincoln Brigade. Across the years and the oceans, still sing the song of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was the Abraham Lincoln Brigade by John McCutcheon. And just to follow that up, that song from the Spanish Civil War about the heroes who sacrificed their lives in the struggle against fascism. I want to quote Kim San's words from the Song of Araran. I've quoted this before on the show. Kim San was a Korean volunteer, a Korean revolutionary who fought against Japanese colonialism in China, and he gave his life in 1937. Fighting alongside the Chinese Red Army against the Japanese invaders of China. And of course, his land itself, Korea, had been colonized by Japan since 1910. And he spent most of his adult life fighting for the liberation of his people. And he wrote the Song of Araran. in partnership with Edgar Snow's wife. Remember, Edgar Snow was the one who wrote the famous book Red Star Over China. And this is what he had to say. Nearly all the friends and comrades of my youth are dead. Hundreds of them. Nationalist, Christian, anarchist, terrorist, communist. But they are alive to me. Where their graves should be, no one ever cared. On the battlefields and execution grounds, on the streets of city and village, their warm revolutionary blood flowed proudly into the soil of Korea, Manchuria, Siberia, Japan, China. They failed in the immediate thing, but history keeps a fine accounting. A man's name and his brief dream may be buried with his bones, but nothing that he has ever done or failed to do is lost in the final balance of forces. That is his immortality, his glory or shame. Not even he himself can change this objective fact, for he is history. Nothing can rob a man of a place in the movement of history. Nothing can grant him escape. His only individual decision is whether to move forward or backward, whether to fight or submit, whether to create value or destroy it, whether to be strong or weak. That's Kim San with the Song of Eraran, a Korean communist in the Chinese Revolution. It's very powerful stuff. And certainly those people in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, the Ernst Thälmann Brigade, the Mackenzie Papineau Brigade of Canadian socialists who went to fight in Spain, they all understood that concept. What Kim San was talking about. And they all understood that they were a part of history. They were part of a historical movement. And they were part of that historical movement. And that is their immortality. So they would never be forgotten. Even if they made the ultimate sacrifice. There are many people who must be remembered, especially at this time of the year. I'm speaking, of course, of Nakba Day, the day of the catastrophe, and, of course, the Palestinian people mark the foundation of the State of Israel and the loss of their land. To colonialism. So this is a crucial time of year for those who are standing in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And to mark this time, I would like to read an article by Dina El-Moody, which appeared in the Electronic Intifada a few years ago in 2013. And it's called We Must Never Forget the Massacre in Deir Yassin. Deir Yassin was the site of one of the most brutal massacres in the ethnic cleansing, which took place in Palestine as the Israeli settlers took control and destroyed Palestinian communities and drove Palestinians off the land. So Dina El-Moody talks about the experience of her grandmother, Fatima Radwan, who lived in Deir Yassin at the time of the massacre in 1948. And the article goes like this: transcribing the vivid details of the account engraved into the fabric of her memory, I am transfixed by all that she'd held on to for 65 years, from paper to pulse, I write the story buried deep in her consciousness to affirm her truth. Without her, it would never be written at all. I study the lines on my grandmother's face, knowing behind every one there is a timeless story of unmitigated pain, survival, and hope. This story, where the continued dispossession, suffering, and oppression of the Palestinian people began, is one that refuses to be silenced or forgotten. It is the story of Dir Yassin. Remember the date, Friday, April 9, 1948, a day of infamy in Palestinian history. My grandmother was 9 years old at the time of the Dir Yassin massacre, and every day since she has lived with a steadfast commitment to never forget. Thursday, April 8th, ended like any other in the small, quiet village. My grandmother and her younger sister returned home from school to complete their composition assignment entitled Azri, meaning to hurry in Arabic. She recounts that detail animatedly. Like other children their age, she wanted to complete the assignment in order to enjoy the next day off. The excitement, however, was short-lived. I can't help but think of the irony in the assignment's title, Azri. It's almost as though it were a premonition of sorts. The following day, entire families ran hurriedly in sheer terror, fleeing the only homes they had ever known to escape a bloodbath. By dawn on that Friday morning, life as they had known it would never be the same again. Dir Yassin would never be the same again. Fathers, grandfathers, brothers, and sons were lined up against a wall and sprayed with bullets, execution style. Beloved teachers were savagely mutilated with knives. Mothers and sisters were taken hostage, and those who survived returned to find pools of blood filling the streets of the village and children stripped of their childhoods overnight. The walls of homes, which once stood witness to warmth, laughter, and joy, were splattered with the blood and imprints of traumatic memories. My grandmother lost 37 members of her family that day. These are not stories you will read about in most history books. The Dir Yassin massacre was not the largest scale massacre, nor was it the most gruesome. The atrocities committed, the scale of violence, and the complexity of the methods and insidious weaponry used by Israel against civilians in the most recent decade have been far more sadistic and pernicious. But Dir Yassin marks one of the most critical turning points in Palestinian history. A bitter symbol carved in the fiber of the Palestinian being and narrative, it resonates sharply as the event that catalyzed our ongoing Nakba catastrophe, marked by the forced exile of 750,000 Palestinians from their homes, creating the largest refugee population worldwide, with more than half living in the diaspora. Dir Yassin is a caustic reminder of the ongoing suffering, struggle, and systematic genocide of the Palestinian people, 65 years and counting. When the village was terrorized into fleeing, tumultuous shockwaves of terror ran through Palestine, laying the blueprint for the architecture of today's apartheid Israel. I have been fortunate enough to see Dir Yassin and set foot on its sacred ground. Dir Yassin remains a permanently cemented and rigorous reminder of the spirit that has never permitted defeat. Despite the illegal settlements, pillaging, plunder, and human suffering that took place, my grandmother's home stands with resolve just as she does today. The silence of her home and the original stones laid by my great-grandfather's hands remain haunting reminders of life that once existed behind the cold facade. Standing outside her home, I studied the horizon intently and found solace, irrespective of the large wooden Star of David hanging on the window, this scathing and unholy reminder of the ethnic cleansing that took place there could never conceal the insult, injury, and history it attempts to erase. In fact, it is a reminder of the inflicted wounds that remain open and a memory that remains very much alive. All the flags, banners, and stars in the world, all the inconvenient truths, dehumanizing myths of exceptionalism, and litany of crimes will never succeed in drowning out the truth or erasing the memories. My grandmother is an intrepid survivor and living proof that neither the old nor the young will forget. She and survivors like her endure with steadfastness that will live long after they're gone. Their narratives may not be recorded in our history books, but they have left indelible impressions that will remain inscribed in our hearts and minds. The narratives of these survivors will continue to run through the veins of every Palestinian child who carries them in their blood. And so long as our hearts beat, the eloquent symbols of Palestinian life, resistance, resilience, and hope will continue to run strong. No amount of fear-mongering, lip service, or pontificating will ever keep these narratives of resistance from circulating. Because becoming comfortable with our own silence and anesthetizing our minds to all that is past will never be options. After all, we are the children of generations of strength. Our grandparents and parents are refugees and survivors, and the blood of Deir Yassin courses through our veins. We are like the olive tree, with its tenacious roots in the ground, remaining unshakable and determined to stand its ground with patience and deeply rooted desire to remain. We will see a free and just Palestine because we will have a hand in making it so. Deir Yassin may have catalyzed our catastrophe, but 65 years later, it also continues to catalyze our devotion and enduring love for a people, a cause, and a home that will never be relinquished or forgotten. That's Dean Al Moody. And that's one of the reasons why there was such strong solidarity, such a strong amount of solidarity between the Irish people and the Palestinian people in their respective struggles for liberation. They're very, very conscious of that. And to this day, you know, those people are struggling for independence in Northern Ireland. They still express their solidarity with the Palestinian people. And they understand that their struggles are connected. You know, very intimately so. You know, they know this. You know, and that's the kind of international solidarity that we need to see in the world today. Between peoples who are struggling against imperialism. People who are struggling to be, struggling to be heard. They're fighting against attempts to silence them. You know, so I want to play a song, an Irish song, but it could just as easily apply to Palestine. I really want to bring it forward in a spirit of solidarity. With the people of Palestine. I say it's not really a song, it's a poem. A poem which I've played many times, but it's never inappropriate to play it. And I'd say this piece of poetry is not just never gets old, it's eternal. This is Bobby Sands' The Rhythm of Time. Thank you.
There's an inner thing in every man. Do you know this thing, my friend? It has withstood the blows of a million years and will do so to the end. It was born when time did not exist, and it grew up out of life. It cut down evil, strangling veins like a slicing, searing knife. It lit fires when fires were not, and burnt the mind of men, tempering leaden hearts to steel from the time that time began. It wept by the waters of Babylon, and when all men were a loss, it screeched in writhing agony, and it hung bleeding from the cross. It died in Rome by land and sword in defiant, cruel array, when the deathly word was Spartacus along the Appian Way. It marched with what the tailors poor, and frightened lord and king, and it was emblazoned in their deathly stir as ere a living thing. It smiled in holy innocence before conquistadors of old, so meek and tame and unaware of the deathly power of gold. It burst forth through pitiful Paris streets and stormed the old Bastille, and marched upon the serpent's head and crushed it neath its heel. It died in blood on buffalo plains and starved by moons of rain. Its heart was buried in wounded knee, but it will come to rise again. It screamed along by Kerry lakes as it knelt upon the ground, and it died in great defiance as they coldly shut it down. It is found in every light of hope. It knows no bounds nor space. It has risen in red and black and white. It is there in every race. It lies in the hearts of heroes dead. It screams in tyrants' eyes. It has reached the peaks of mountain high. It comes searing across the skies. It lights the dark of this prison cell. It thunders forth its might. It is the undauntable thought, my friend, that thought that says I'm right.
Back in the USSR, we'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, your community station for over 30 years.
Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars and change the world. Harriet Tubman, civil rights activist and conductor on the Underground Railroad. What is freedom? For the freedom seekers on the Underground Railroad, it was freedom from slavery. Indigenous communities and abolitionists also risked their lives for that freedom. However, liberation from bondage is just the beginning. Freedom seekers also persevered to finally have the freedom to be star-reaching, world-changing dreamers. Introducing Refuge, a free 12-week program for immigrant youth and youth of color that brings guests Mosa McNeely, Brent Rowan, Joni Narita, and Truth Is with Kevin Sutton as we reach for the stars and dream a better world. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, starting February 20th, explore the stories of the Underground Railroad, then share our vision at Heritage Hall on May 21st, and help make Guelph a refuge for freedom seekers from around the world.
For more information and to register, visit is-gw.ca/refuge. Unfortunately, Heritage Hall is not a physically accessible location.
Are you drawn to aggressive sounds? Are you subject to violent outbursts of rage? Do you have sudden urges to destroy everything in sight? If so, we have just the thing for you.
Forever Death!
Forever Death on 93.3 CFRU, Thursday nights at 10 after 10, following the BBC.
This year, the City of Guelph is thrilled to be hosting the Special Olympics Ontario Spring Games happening May 26th to the 28th. The sporting events featured are swimming, powerlifting, basketball, rhythmic gymnastics, five-pin bowling, and 10-pin bowling. There will also be an official opening ceremony on May 26th, as well as a closing ceremony and athlete's dance on May 28th. The games are free to attend, and specific information about times and locations can be found at SpecialOlympics2016Games.com. That's the 2016 Special Olympics Ontario Spring Games, happening May 26th to the 28th. We hope to see you there!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. And of course, before the break there, we heard from probably the poem that speaks the most to me, probably of any that I've really ever heard. And that, of course, is Bobby Sands' The Rhythm of Time, which I've actually had the privilege of performing myself a number of times at various poetry events. But there is a poem which I actually want to perform here, like right now, tonight. For somebody who frankly means quite a lot to me, and who is going through some, well, needless to say, some quite difficult times right now. And I wrote this poem for her a number of weeks ago. I even got a chance to read it to her in front of her, actually. And it was quite a... You know, that was quite an experience in and of itself. But this poem is called A Love Poem to a Sex Worker, because my friend actually is a sex worker. And I guess this, you could say this is a poem of solidarity with her. And I'm not really sure what else to say, so I'm just going to start to read it. How is pain such a unifying force that you, who once walked at my life's periphery, now take center stage, filling my senses and battering down my fortress walls with the war machines of your pain, the siege guns of your truth turning my defenses to rubble, forcing me to look at you. And I look at you. I see you. I see past the veil. I follow you as you go. I see your path through the constellations of fear, madness, rage, and addiction. A maze society builds for the rats trapped within its corridors, the same society that screams at you night after night, day after day, that you are a worthless human being. Until you are coming down. Battered and bruised, their talons in your soul. You are besieged from within by a mind you do not control, and besieged from without by a world that treats you as some kind of universal spittoon, some kind of public shithouse draining the city's excess lust. Your blood has stained the streets you walk, just as prejudice has poisoned men's souls across centuries. Damaged goods. That is how I was meant to see you in the eyes of the powers that be. A loose woman, a harlot, an embodiment of all that is perverse and degraded, fit only to be denounced from the pulpit and precinct alike. I was taught to view you as less than dirt by a society that continues to internalize the merciless preachings of inquisitors and witch hunters, and continues to march to the rhythm of colonial killing fields. But I am no inquisitor, just a base heretic, and heretic walls do not exist to keep out those who are forced to dwell in darkness. You have shredded through the paper-thin remnants of my prejudices, broken the last vestiges of Judeo-Christian values, and forced me to see the beauty of the witch, the beauty of the human soul submerged in filth yet still full of sound and fury, the beauty of the spirit that burns defiant amid shadows. I stand before you, Naked and exposed to truths I cannot comprehend, so removed are they from my experience, yet still so close. For we both walk the path of the outsider in a society with limitless appetites. Me, communist. You, sex worker. Both of us heretics in their eyes. So who am I to judge you? And who are you to judge me? In a world that seeks only to devour our souls, we do what we must to survive. We do what must be done to feel pride amidst the tears. And I can't kill the demons within you or unbound your mind so that the BPD and ADHD won't hold you back from sharing all that you are. But I don't have to. For nothing can contain this spirit. Nothing can contain this spirit, the music of your soul and the poetry of your veins. Words ready to burst forth like a volcanic eruption, a tsunami, and you will ride the waves to realms undreamed of. Crossing the seas and penetrating the clouds, chasing away dragons and evil spirits. You are a storm, a beautiful storm. A beautiful human being. A fire burns in you, darling. Crackling, blazing, spreading. I am catching, and I am part of your inferno. And I do not know. I do not know, is it a funeral pyre or the life-giving ashes of the phoenix? Is it the end, or is it just the low point of a cosmic cycle that will someday carry us to unimaginable heights of glory? Can there even be a place for us in this mad, mad world? I have no answers. My love and solidarity is all I have to offer. And this is a song of solidarity I want to dedicate to the same person. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Paul and Silas bound in jail. Had no money for to go the bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Paul and Silas thought they was lost. Dungeon shook and the chains come off. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Freedom's name is mighty sweet, and soon we're gonna meet. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. I got my hand on a gospel plow. Won't take nothing from my journey now. Keep your eyes on. Hold on, keep your eyes.